Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the first workshop session. I know you are excited. I am. I always get really excited this time and all that we anticipate that God's going to do. So it's going to be a good week, and I'm just happy to welcome you here. My name is Sue Fultz. I'm a Center Service Specialist with CareNet, and we're just here to serve you. So if there's anything you need, just be sure to let me know. Just to kind of get you going, we will be doing evaluations this year, paper evaluations, like we've always done in the past and began back last year. So I'll be passing those out. If you'll be sure I get that, those are important to us. So be sure that if I don't give you one, that you check with me and get one of those. We are recording, and so if you ask questions, our speaker will repeat the question so everyone can hear it, and so it will be on the recording. So let me pray for you before we begin, and then I want to introduce our speaker. Father, we just are so grateful, Lord, for CareNet and for these CareNet workers that you've brought to this place. Lord, we're here with anticipation and expectation. We ask that you send your Holy Spirit to speak to us, to teach us and train us and inspire us, that when we go back, Lord, we are equipped to do what you've called us to do, and we just pray that your presence will be felt here, and that, Lord, we will know that we have been touched by your hand and that you have guided us through this session. So thank you again for your blessing for each person here, for their centers. We pray your favor and your blessing on them. In Jesus' name, amen. And so Scott Phelps is a former abstinence presenter for Care First Pregnancy Centers in Chicago. Former director of a program development for Project Reality. He is the author of 5 leading abstinence education programs used nationally, Game Plan, Quest, Aspire, Navigator, and Excel. Scott Phelps is the founder and president of Abstinence and Marriage Education Resources. He is a national leader of character-based abstinence education programs. And I know you're going to enjoy hearing Scott. Would you please make him welcome now? Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that very much. All right. Well, hey, listen, I am very, very excited. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. I haven't been to CareNet for a while. I'm glad to be here doing a presentation with you today on a positive approach to abstinence education. And I feel like I've got an awful lot to cover. I feel like, okay, we got to really cover a lot of ground here in a very short period of time. But before we get started, I want to get to know you a little bit. I want to find out who you are and why you're here. It's helpful for me to, and it's helpful for all of us to get some sense. Would you, as we go around, say who you are, where you're from, just a sentence or two on what you have or are doing with abstinence education, either in your center or in your local schools? Let's start over here. Good and loud for us.
Melinda Van Ostrand, Brenham, Texas. And currently we have very limited availability of any type of abstinence education, but we feel like really something you need to
have. Good. Good. Wonderful. Thank you.
Kelly Madden, CareNet Pregnancy Center of Indian River County. I'm the Director of Client Services, and we do not have an outreach person to present abstinence education to my volunteers that I bring.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here.
And where is it again?
Vero Beach, Florida.
Wonderful. Okay, great.
I'm Renata Ferranti. I'm a college community abstinence program, and we partner with Scott, we are a nonprofit, and we supply abstinence workbooks to teachers in the school so that they can teach directly to the students, and we provide one workbook for each student. It's all supported by donors. And we're looking to expand and provide this for anyone who wants it in the school. And it's been very effective since we've been doing it since 2004. Our ranking for the lowest SPD for chlamydia has gone from 28th lowest to 4th lowest out of all the 7 counties. And it's been a drop in the first unwed mothers by 50% to half. Wow. So we're trying to
So we're going to actually say more about that. I asked Renata to come. This is her banner and brochures up here. We're going to talk more about the model that she's working with down in Naples area. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes.
I am Beth Daly from Indiana, and I'm the chairman of the board of our Christ Pregnancy Center, but I've also been a volunteer for years working with
Wonderful.
And I'm actually certified as a deep cleaning and amp reader from years ago.
Wonderful, yeah.
I've always used the resource.
Excellent.
When I saw that.
Good, good.
Just recently got trained with parents and speakers and stuff like
yep.
that. Yep. And excited about that, hoping that there's a new grant that just came out.
Yep. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you.
I'm Samantha Fitzpatrick. I'm a local from the Central Florida Pregnancy Center.
Great.
I live right in Oviedo here. I'm here in Orlando. I'm the director of SRA Education for there. This is a brand new
okay.
program. I just hired a year ago to try to start up in the community doing national participation. I also met Becky at their teacher training.
Good. Wonderful. Thank you. Next.
Hi, I'm Erin Cleveland. I'm from Vandalia, Illinois. I'm a convention educator at our pregnancy resource center.
What town? Which is where? Excellent. Wonderful. Wonderful. Do you know Relate, Julie Mayfield, any of those folks? Yeah, good. We've worked closely. Yes, wonderful. Okay.
I was working at Karen Pregnancy Center in California, Maryland, and I'm an outreach director there.
Good. Wonderful. We've done a lot of work in Prince George's County. Are you near there? Yeah, wonderful. Great. Thanks. We can talk more. Yes. And Portland is about where? Gotcha. Okay. Wonderful. Yep. I was just in Kingsville, and they're starting up in the schools there. Yeah. Very good. We can talk more about that. Wonderful. Yes. Good. Super. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you. Good. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Great. Yes. Yeah, fantastic. Very good.
So now I'm Executive Director of the Compassionate Care Pregnancy Center in Plainview. This is our ninth year using
yes.
this curriculum.
Wonderful.
And can I just throw out a statistic? 2008, 2009, we had somewhere between 110 and 120 girls pregnant at Plainview High School. We're now 22,000, by the way.
And 22,000, and how many kids? How many girls?
110 to 120 girls.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Fantastic. So good to see you, Sunil. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes.
Sissy Hedrick, Angel Camp, California. I am the executive director. Been there for 5 years. Been volunteering with them for about 20 years.
And where's Angel's Camp?
2.5 hours directly east of San Francisco in the Motherlode. Mark Twain Country.
Really? My in-laws, Carrie was just there, came in yesterday morning from El Dorado Hills.
Yeah, from Calvert County.
So you're right there. Yeah. We're from San Francisco originally, so yeah, wonderful. Yes.
I'm Holly France from Henderson, Kentucky. Marshall Slate is our PRC.
Okay.
And I am the abstinence coordinator and an RN in the office.
Terrific. Wonderful. Thank you.
My name is Sydney Foyster. I'm from the Women's Care Center in Bray County, which is in Dayton, Tennessee.
Okay.
Okay. Something that's kind of cool about me is that I grew up in Ray County, and I went through the program when I was in high school, and then I'm now the director of
yeah.
years later. So
terrific.
We're in 4 counties, 10
Excellent. Wonderful. Yes.
Mary Grover. I'm a
Okay.
I'm the absence education coordinator. We're currently in 39 middle and high schools throughout Southern Indiana.
Terrific. Terrific. What's the town?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, Louisville, Kentucky. Okay, great. And then you said Indiana, so I was confused, yeah, but you're on the border. Close. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
We're on both sides.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I'm Lori Hurst, executive director from Newton, New Jersey. Today's choice, pregnancy reproduction.
Okay.
We were in the schools for about 14 years, but we've had a problem keeping volunteers.
Yeah.
And our programming updating, so we've
good.
Been reaching out.
Good, good, good. Wonderful. So glad you're here. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, terrific. Thank you. Yes.
Catherine Downey from Oakville, Kentucky. And I've been the executive coordinator, and our program is about 10 years old. We have a great relationship with the women and want to there.
Wonderful.
So we're just looking to kind of revamp it.
Wonderful. Good for you. Thank you. Good. Excellent. Thank you. Back here. In where? Okay, gotcha. Good. Good for you. Wonderful. Yes. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Good for you. We worked very extensively years ago with Judy Votley at Catholic Charities in Buffalo. Yeah. Are you near there then, or? Yeah. Wow. Very good. Thank you. Yes. Good. Good. Terrific. Thank you. Lovely. Yeah. What does atheism have to do with absence education? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
All
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, this is helpful. It's helpful. Really want to get kind of a sense of where we're at, where we've been, where we're going. I've been doing this for quite a while, as was mentioned. I started out doing this in a pregnancy care center in Chicago in the late 1990s and saw such a need for it, kind of just dove headlong into it. And so just a little bit then about A&M as we start off. Why A&M? I started off actually as a pastor. That's how I got into this in the first place. And we're off and running. So I started off as a pastor, and I kept seeing things in my own church that concerned me. And I thought to myself, am I just going to continue to sit here and watch families break apart and abortions and teen pregnancy? I can't just sit here waiting. And so one of the things that really impacted me was one time as a young pastor, a teenage girl came in to see me with her single parent mom, and she was pregnant. The teenage girl, 16 years old, was pregnant and on her way to have an abortion. Mom says, we're going to go see the pastor first. So here I am with this 16-year-old pregnant girl in my office on her way to have an abortion, and I'm thinking about a couple in our church that has been on a list to adopt for many years and hasn't been able to do so. So I said to her, is there any way that you would be willing to consider, instead of an abortion, carrying this baby to term, play, we can do an open adoption with the agency? She agreed to do that. So it was such a beautiful send-off for this couple who then adopted and then moved across town. And it was an open adoption where she could still see the baby. It was beautiful. And how wonderful and bittersweet that was as we saw this beautiful couple leave our church, but then how sad it was when a year later that same girl was back in my office pregnant again, and this time would not be dissuaded and off to the clinic she went. Things like that made me say, there's got to be more that I can do as a pastor than just sit here and wait for the problems to come to me. And so I was seeing things like teen pregnancy, abortion, cohabitation, divorce, family breakdown, poverty. The common theme that I saw in my counseling sessions as pastor was related to non-marital sexual activity. Today, of course, teens were exposed to over 7.5 hours of media per day. That statistic is now so dated. I mean, every day I think statistics get dated in terms of media exposure, right? I mean, we all spend 7.5 hours of media, not per day, but every hour, I think, we spend 7.5 hours on the media. So there's just, right, we're just inundated, saturated, and our kids are too. I mean, my boys, I have two 18-year-old boys who I waited until they were 18 to get them a smartphone. Apparently, I should have waited longer. I mean, seriously, it's just a constant, you know, thing. I'm just like, wow. But we're all like that, right? Just the media is so powerful. All right, so quick overview then, 5 programs that we have developed over the years, providing an alternative message to what kids are hearing in the media. We're one of the leading providers of abstinence programs in the country. Over 1 million, actually, we say 1.5 million now have been through our programs. And we really want to help parents. All of our materials have a parent component. End of every chapter, we've got a parent page. I'll be talking a little bit about the curriculum. I'll do some sample lessons, but this is a much bigger, broader workshop than that. So I'm not going to get into lots of the details of the curricula, but just an overview here to tell you what they are. These are the 5. These first 2 were for middle school, Game Plan and Quest. The second 2 are for high schools, and this one is for churches and Christian schools particularly, or in-center faith-based counseling you could do as well. But these are designed to be in public schools, and they are in public schools. So it gives you an idea of where we've been. These are some of the places where our programs have been implemented over the years. There it is, 1.5 million, so. I've actually been there. You can see Santa's house from there. That is Barrow, Alaska, and it's crazy. I mean, I think I was there in November, and, you know, the sun comes up, if you can call it up, at like 11:30 a.m., and then it's down at 2. You know, it's just crazy. And so anyway. Okay, so today, what are we going to try to do today? These 4 things are where we're going to go today. Why Marriage Matters in an Abstinence Program will be session 1. We'll take a break between each session. Overview of effective abstinence lessons. I'll give some samples from our Aspire program in particular. And then effective teaching techniques. Let's talk about, it's not just what you say, but then how you say it. How do we communicate to kids in a way that they really are like, sign me up. Where do I get in line for that? I'm for that. So we want to talk about effective teaching techniques. And then 4th is going to be something new, a grand vision brainstorming session. I have some things on my heart that I've never shared publicly that I want to share with you. And I want to brainstorm with you some sort of big ideas for the movement. And I want to get your feedback. And depending on how it goes, I might share some things tomorrow at the workshop tomorrow, which is much larger. I've got a first session tomorrow with over 100 people in it. And so we'll test it out and see how that goes. I just have some ideas that I'd like to kick around with you and get your feedback on this one, a grand vision. For where we as a movement should be going. So it'll go like this. Well, we're already off schedule because we should be starting session 1, and we're just about to start. So we'll take little breaks in between here, but that should take us right up to about 5:30. Starting off, why marriage matters in an abstinence education program. This, to me, is most fundamental. This is essentially the workshop I will do tomorrow morning. Anybody signed up to go to that in the morning? Because there will be quite a bit of duplication, but oh well. There's some things I have to hit first. In other words, the marriage component for me is the fundamental foundation of everything that we're doing. It's not like I can start in chapter 2. I have to start in chapter 1, which is marriage. And so you'll see why as we kind of get into it here. So there will be some things different today and tomorrow morning, but I am going to cover a lot, just FYI, a lot of the same material in the morning with some additional things thrown in. So I started off getting into the whole marriage part of this well, very early on, but particularly back in around 2001, right when we had written Game Plan with A.C. Green, I was in Washington, D.C. at the Office of the Healthy Marriage Initiative. And I was asking questions about what is the relationship between absence education programs and the Healthy Marriage Initiative. Because I said, I took a copy of Game Plan, and I said, look here, chapter 6, I want to show you. Chapter 6 in our Game Plan book is called, or chapter 7 in our Game Plan book is called Winning the Prize. And it's all about how you should strive toward marriage and how marriage is good and beautiful and valuable and wonderful. And so help me understand, Washington, D.C. people, how your new marriage program syncs up with the absence education programs, because I see them as being very consistent with one another. However, I picked up a brochure in the office of the Healthy Marriage Initiative that said this, 10 things you can do to prepare for a healthy future marriage. And like number 6 said, you should wait to have sex at least until you're out of high school. And I'm like, I'm scratching my head. Now, I have to say that wasn't a brochure put out by the Healthy Marriage Initiative. It was a grantee of the program that they had a sample copy of. But nevertheless, my question was, shouldn't there be a consistency of messaging from the absence education programs to the marriage education programs? We really need to be singing the same song. We need to be saying the same thing. The message needs to be consistent. It was out of those meetings that I actually came up with the name of Abstinence and Marriage Education Partnership. And looking for, what I was looking for was this. I was looking for a bridge between abstinence education and marriage education. Why can't we feather those two things together, and shouldn't we feather those two things together? And I have never stopped in seeing and communicating the necessity of the marriage of those two concepts. And that's what we're covering here in this first session, why that's important. Because where do healthy marriages begin? If we're concerned about the decline of marriage in our culture, and we are, right? How are we going to fix that? Where do we begin? And so this whole initiative was basically looking at intervention programs to help struggling marriages. And what I was saying to the DC people was, at the time, shouldn't we designate a little bit of that money to help young people understand how to prepare for a healthy future marriage? Shouldn't we sort of go to the beginning and help them understand from the start? And so that was very much what we were concerned about. So why are we concerned about teens if we try to break it down and try to get to the core of what we're concerned about? What is the fundamental problem that we face today? Is it teen pregnancy? Is it teen STDs? Is it teen sexual activity? Is it breakdown of marriage and family? If you had to target one of these, if you said, okay, that's the thing that we're going to really go after, which of these four things would you target and really go after? You say number 4 because why? So these three things are important things, but they tend to be symptomatic, I think you're saying, of this one. And I would agree with that. I think that's true. I think that these things are symptoms of a larger problem. And I don't want to build a program chasing symptoms. I want to attack the root. I want to go to the cause, the core, the basic, the place where it all begins. So I need to start here, for example. Glenn Stanton puts it this way. He's focused on the family, wrote a fantastic book, of which I've got some up here. Two books that I have here that I'm going to commend to you from Glenn Stanton. Why Marriage Matters, and then The Ring Makes All the Difference. I've only brought a few copies of each of them. They're $15 each, but I just want you to know that they're there. Glenn says in his book, Why Marriage Matters, of all the social problems facing American civilization, the decline of marriage and the breakup of the family is unquestionably our most pressing problem. Its impact is widespread and comprehensively destructive. Agree, disagree? Yeah. And so Glenn is saying this is the root. This is the core of the problem. So yes, of course we're concerned about things like teen pregnancy, STD infections, but we need to understand these things in a larger sociological framework. Maggie Gallagher puts it this way. She wrote The Case for Marriage, along with Linda Waite. She says, when men and women fail to form stable marriages, the first result is a vast expansion of government attempts to cope with the terrible social needs that result. There is scarcely a dollar that the state and federal government spends on social programs that is not driven in large part by family fragmentation, crime, poverty, drug abuse, teen pregnancy, school failure, mental and physical health problems, right? What is she saying? She's saying that so much of what the government is involved in today is a mopping up operation. We've really got to increase the mop budget, right? And that's how, isn't that what we see today? What we see is a constant call for more mops. And what we're saying then is, rather than buying more mops, shouldn't we try to find where the water's coming in and seal that up? And so this is why this part is so fundamental. We've really got to sort of step back from absence education to understand what it is that we're actually trying to accomplish in the first place. Now let's try to analyze this and dig in a little bit to some of the data. We're very data-driven. Everything we do is based in research. All of our workbooks have at the back multiple pages of footnotes with Centers for Disease Control, Health and Human Services. We really want to know, what does the data say? Where are the highest rates of birth outside of marriage, would you say? Is it ages 15 to 19? 2024. Let's do a hand raise, and everybody has to participate. You can't wait until you get the answer and be like, oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. No. You're going to raise your hand. So let's start here. How many people would say the highest rates of birth outside of marriage is here? How many would say here? 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 And here? Okay, so let's see. Now, if you get this right, this is kind of weird. You're going to feel kind of good about yourself. It's pride. It's a sin. We all do it. But watch this. You see what I mean. Let's check now. Highest rates of birth outside of marriage. Answer is, drum roll please. Who got that right? How do you feel? Good. Yeah, I see. All right, now that's number one. What's number two? Number three? What is it? Number four? Number five? Surprising? It is surprising. And that has shifted slightly over the past couple of years. But nevertheless, this was four, now it's five. Here it is from the, here's the actual data set from the National Center for Vital Statistics. Yes? No, you know, I get that a lot. There aren't. In fact, actually, one of the things that we're going to see today is that for teens, teen pregnancy rates generally are up or down, would you say?
Down.
Teen pregnancies, births, and abortions, all at all-time recorded lows, consistently. So that it's not as though pregnancy is down, birth is down, but abortion is up. So we are seeing, for example, abortion, we used to say 4,000 babies a day aborted in America, right? We used to say that. Now what do we say? That's 3,000 a day. That's good news. We're moving in the right direction. We've got a long way to go. But it's lower than what it used to be when I started doing this. So anyway, coming back here, this is the data set from the National Center for Health Statistics. We said number one, number two, number three, number four, and then number five. Now, number five, 15 to 19, if I talk to you, if I mention teen pregnancy, are you thinking of high school age girls or college age girls? If I just say teen pregnancy, your mind goes to high school girls. So let's break this down. Let's analyze this a little bit, because this is going to include high school and college age girls. So let's take a look at this. If we break it down, if we take out the college age girls, 18 and 19, and look at the high school age girls and below, what we find is the college age girls actually represent 2/3 of the teen pregnancy rate. So when you're talking about teen pregnancy, you're mostly talking about college age girls, more so than teenagers. Now, your name is, you're going to talk about colleges? Abigail. And you are, tell me again, were you going to go to some colleges, or what are you thinking with colleges?
So there's a college that I'm working with right now that has every day, like, professional colleges. So
yeah.
So, and they kind of, like, celebrate the whole thing that's supposed to be made on that.
Yeah. 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 That's excellent. And where is this again?
It's in St. Mary's County in Maryland.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I was 4 years in our varsity staff. Yeah. Excellent. Good for you. Love to chat with you about that. Because I think the whole college thing is all of this affirmative consent. Oh my! Don't even get me started on this. It's a whole other thing that when you throw out marriage and you have no rules, then you are basically chasing your tail, right? And what's happening now with these affirmative consent laws is they're basically saying what? We've got to have some rules. Well, you threw out the rules. All right, so anyway, that's why are we doing that? So this is really important just to understand kind of what's happening here. Now, if we break it down between high school age girls and this should say, I need to fix this slide. This is 18 plus, 18 and above. So if we break this down to high school age girls and then all adults 18 and above, then you find out that 95% of the non-marital birth rate occurs among adults. Very surprising information. I mean, you just don't hear this kind of thing. So why am I saying this? Am I here to say to you that teen pregnancy isn't a problem, that we really don't even need to worry about it? Let's move on. Is that what I'm saying, do you think? I'm not saying that. What am I saying? Okay, we're going to get to that. Right now, I'm not so much saying anything yet as I am getting the data out, and that's where we're going, is to the marriage piece. But first of all, I just want to understand what... Look, we can't solve a problem if we don't know what it is. So let's dig into the data a little bit and try to figure out what's going on, and that's what we're doing. So now, if we look at this historically, the percentage of non-marital births over time, this to me is perhaps the most devastating data set. And I've got a sheet on this in your folders. I find this to be tremendously significant and important to understand what's happening. What does this chart tell us if, for example, teen births and pregnancies and abortions are at an all-time recorded low, non-marital births overall are at an all-time recorded high? Think about that for a minute. Teen births at an all-time recorded low, we're down 50% plus from where we were 20 years ago on teen births. And non-marital births overall are all the way up 41%. In 1960, 95% of teens were born to a married mom and dad, or 1 in 20 were born outside of marriage. By the year 2000, that had increased all the way up to 1 in 3. And soon, where are we going to be? Soon, most American children will be born outside of a marriage relationship. Should we be concerned about this? Are we concerned about abortion? Where do most abortions occur? Among married women or unmarried women? 85% of abortions occur among unmarried women. So what are the implications then of this graph? See, all of this is important then for us to understand. And so what this graph indicates to us is what? What messages, if teen births are at an all-time low, non-marital births are at an all-time high, what messages seem to be getting through and what messages seem not to be getting through to our young people? Okay, say that again loud so everybody can hear you. Yes. So the message that's getting through is you're too young, you should wait. What's the message that's not getting through? That you should wait until marriage. And so my question is, if we're telling kids to wait until they're older, until they're mature, until they're out of high school, until they're better able to handle the consequences, as I've heard it said, What have we really accomplished? What is it? We're just kicking the can down the road, right? And so unless we're clearly communicating to young people why marriage is best for sexual activity and childbearing, let me ask you, if you don't teach them the value of marriage and the relationship between sex and marriage, first of all, let's just stop right there. Is there a relationship between sex and marriage? What happened here? Something happened. What is it? Which said what? Free love meaning what? Meaning what? What is free? What's free? Free from what? What commitment? Marriage! Thank you. The sexual revolution said you can be free from marriage. You can get yourself some contraception and have sex with anybody that you want. What the sexual revolution did at its core was to de-link sex and marriage. This is the result. So what's our task? To relink. Because if you don't teach it to them, tell me where they're going to learn it. They're going to learn what from social media? That sex and marriage go together? Where are they going to learn that sex and marriage go together? Where are they going to learn that? They're not getting it. Now, we want to help parents. They should get it from their parents. We want to help parents to do that. Right? That's our first, best, optimal situations for the parents to communicate it to their kids. Failing that, we want to help schools and churches communicate that message to kids and support the parents in that, right? So we want to equip and support and help parents to communicate that message. And if we don't do it, my question is, where are they going to get it? So, so important, so critical. Well, let's come back here to the sexual revolution thing for a minute, because there's so much on this chart that's critical to understand. Was sexual activity outside of marriage, did that happen over here? It did, but what? Not as much, and frowned upon. You didn't celebrate it. You didn't march down the street. You didn't have television shows promoting it, right? What is it? And if you got pregnant, you got married. Yeah. Sent away. When I say television shows didn't promote it, does anybody remember a television show by the name of Murphy Brown? And what the controversy was involving that show at one point? She was a single mom, a white television anchor, you know, successful, professional, choosing not to be married and to have a child. And someone spoke up about that. Anybody remember that person's name? He was the Vice President of the United States. What was it? Dan Quayle. Remember Dan? What do you remember about Dan? This poor guy. I just want to give him a hug. This poor guy. Think about this. Like, if you were ever President of the United States, you'd kind of feel like you accomplished something. This poor guy, his legacy is a potato. Everybody, I do workshops all over the country. Everyone is potato. He can't spell potato. That's it. That's his thing. He can't spell potato. Here's the amazing thing about that. Does anybody know this? Does anybody know what actually happened? Does anybody know that when he was in that middle school reading the spelling bee card, that he was handed a card with the word potato misspelled on it that he was reading? Does anybody know that? Poor Dan. I mean that seriously. What the media does to people. Because they hated him and they trashed him, and what he actually was saying was spot on. He spoke up about the Murphy Brown incident in a speech on May 19, 1992 to the Commonwealth Club of San Francisco. And this was right after the Rodney King riots in L.A., and he had just been over to Japan, and he was on his way back, and he was stopping in San Francisco on his way back to Washington, and he said there in San Francisco at the Commonwealth Club what had happened on his trip over to Japan and how people were asking him all about the Rodney King riots, about inner-city tensions, and it was really kind of a crazy time, not unlike the Ferguson situation just now happening in this past year or so, or the Baltimore situation. The Rodney King thing was a big deal back then. So he was answering a lot of questions about that. And he gave this speech entitled On Family Values, and I want you to hear what he is saying, because here's what he is saying. He was basically addressing the case that at the time, a welfare was basically subsidizing and helping mothers with children if what? If they weren't married. And that the more children they had while unmarried, the more what? Money they would get. Anybody see a problem with this? Now, I can understand, right? We can all understand, I think, the noble intentions of wanting to support and help single mothers. We all get that, right? Single mothers have a tough row to hoe, so we want to help them, so we want to give them money. And if they have more children, we want to give them more money. However, there are always unintended consequences, such as... Exactly. And so what was happening? Don't get married. If I get married, I lose my check. She can come around, but we're not getting married. We can live together. But we can't get married. And Dan Quayle was addressing that. And he was saying, look, we got a problem that needs to be fixed. And he was talking in 1992 about something called welfare reform. And so he said this. Well, I'm ahead of myself. Let me get to the next slide because I'm just ahead of myself just a little bit. Because if you look here, if you break this down demographically, what you find is that in among the white population, the non-marital birth rate is at 29%. Hispanic is, I said pretty soon, most children in America will be born outside of a marriage relationship. Hispanic community, it's already over 50%. And in the black community, 72% of children born outside of marriage. Dan Quayle was addressing this particular problem back in 1992. He says in 1967, 68% of black families were headed by married couples. But in 1991, only 48% of black families were headed by both a husband and a wife. And he goes on with these sorts of statistics as reflected on this graph here. I don't need to read all the details of that. But then he says this. Our inner cities are filled with children having children, with people who have not been able to take advantage of the educational opportunities, with people who are dependent upon drugs or the narcotic of welfare. To be sure, many people struggle very hard against these tides and sometimes win, but too many people feel they have no hope and nothing to lose. When family fails, society fails. The lack of anarchy and lack of structure in our inner cities are a testament to how quickly civilization falls apart when the family foundation crashes. Children need love and discipline. They need mothers and fathers. A welfare check is not a husband. The state is not a father. It is from parents that children learn how to behave in society. It is from parents, above all, that children come to understand values and themselves as men and women, mothers and fathers. And for those who are concerned about children growing up in poverty, we should know this. Marriage is probably the best anti-poverty program of all. And then he goes on to talk about poverty statistics. Bearing babies irresponsibly is simply wrong. Failing to support children one has fathered is wrong, and we must be unequivocal about this. Here it is, literally one sentence. The media went bonkers over this sentence. It's one sentence. I'm giving you some context for it. Here it is. It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice. I know it's not fashionable to talk about moral values, but we need to do it. Even though our cultural leaders in Hollywood and network TV and national newspapers routinely jeer at them, I think most of us in this room know that some things are wrong and other things are bad, and now it's time to make the discussion public. It's time to talk again about the family, about hard work, about integrity and personal responsibility. And here it is. We cannot be embarrassed out of our belief that two parents married to each other are better in most cases for children than one. Now, he was right on, and he was roundly mocked and criticized by the media as attacking a television character. What an idiot. What an idiot. He's attacking it. Doesn't he know she's fiction? She's not even real. He was giving a very substantive speech on the need for government policy to support and strengthen rather than to hinder the growth of families. And he used, in one sentence, an illustration of how it's not helpful on television to make it look all glamorous and, yay, isn't this great? Because in reality, he's saying it's not great. It's challenging. It's difficult. So these are some of the things that that we face. Roland Warren, who, as you know, is the head of CareNet, used to be the head of the National Fatherhood Initiative. And when he was in that role, he wrote an article in USA Today, which I told them I quote all the time. He said this, Roland Warren wrote this article back several years back entitled Marriage is the Great Equalizer for Blacks. Here's what he wrote. As a happily married man, I have been troubled by the oft-stated myth that the institution of wedlock has never been central to the African-American heritage. Unfortunately, this view has permeated the African-American community and society at large. Now, it may be single-handedly holding back blacks in their pursuit of social, economic, and educational progress. According to Senate testimony given last fall to a Senate subcommittee by Ron Haskins of the Brookings Institution, from 1970 to 2001, the overall marriage rate declined by 72%, but it was, declined by 17%, but it was 34% for blacks. The overall rate for out-of-wedlock births is 33% compared to 70% for blacks. This was a few years ago. These disappointing trends are critical because research has shown that marriage provides significant benefits for men and women. Most important, children who are raised by their married biological parents do better across every measure of economic, social, health, and educational well-being than children raised in other family arrangements. In fact, when comparing families of similar socioeconomic status, these black children have similar outcomes as their white counterparts. Marriage, he says, is the great equalizer. And so he makes the very strong point, doesn't he, that children growing up in married homes have similar outcomes. And so this is what we're looking at here. Now, I just recently added this slide because I think this is very significant. If you look at the ages of 20 to 24, look at what you find. This is sort of, you know, prime childbearing years of 20 to 24. What you notice is that the vast majority of children born to young women in their 20s are outside of marriage. So this is important then for us to consider and understand. This is just where I get this. I don't expect to be able to read this. I'm just showing you that all of this is available online. Births and birth rates for unmarried women by age, race, Hispanic origin, 2013. As of 15 is the last. I don't think the 16 one is out yet, but I'll have to double check that. So what's our purpose then? A&M exists to ensure that every teenager in the country has the opportunity to hear a clearly reasoned, positive presentation on the benefits of absence until marriage and instruction on preparing for a healthy future marriage. That's the A and the M. You can see it here. We want to teach them on the benefits of absence until marriage and, there's the ampersand, instruction on preparing for a healthy future marriage. Those are the two things we want to faithfully communicate. Now, the key word here is opportunity. Does every teenager in the country right now have the opportunity to hear and understand what the absence until marriage message is? They don't. It's not the default message. What's the default message in schools around the country and in the media? Birth control. Birth control. Here's how to use birth control. And so it's really, really important then that we understand what it is that we're trying to communicate. And so is every kid that you talk to, kid I should say, or client in your center or student in your high school or middle school or college that you make a presentation to, is every student that you present this message to going to adopt it? Is every student going to embrace the message of abstinence until marriage and wait until they're married? The answer, of course, is no. Why not? Maybe that's why you're here today. You're trying to get better at this. Yes, not everyone is going to choose it. But what? They should have the opportunity to make... Put another way, I want every student who is sexually active to choose to be sexually active. Does that make sense? In other words, I want to... Look, if I take a class of kids through a program like this, and they've had the opportunity to really hear and interact and learn, and then they still choose to be sexually active, are you okay with that? I am. I'm okay with that. I'm not happy about it, but I have to be okay with that. Why? Because my name is not Jesus. Right? I mean, listen, we'll kill ourselves. Right? We can't make people do this. And I don't try. I don't try. And I tell kids that. I'm not telling you what to do. You do whatever you want. I was doing one thing for some honors student group in the middle of Chicago a couple years ago. I said, look, I'm not here to tell you not that you can't have sex. You can. The teachers in the back room were like, what? You're supposed to be an abstinence presenter. And I said, what? Did I say something untrue? Did I say something untrue? If I tell kids you can have sex, did I say something untrue? Or did I say something true? It's true! I'm not here to tell you that you can't because if... Oh, my batteries went away. Hold on. Where did they go? They're by my right foot? Oh. So crazy. Right? So look, don't confuse me with that. Details. So, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm here to help you think through what choices are going to be best for you. At the end of the day, you're going to have to make right. So, and I'm jumping ahead to effective thinking, so we're going to get into all of this. But I'm wanting you to understand that my passion is that every single student in the country of the United States would have the opportunity to give this a hearing, to understand what this means. Look, I had a girl at a Chicago public school say this after a presentation. She wrote this down in the evaluation form. Here's what she said. She said, I think saving sex for marriage is a great idea. I never thought of that before. That's what I want to do. Ding, 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 right? Bingo! That's what we're looking for. In other words, it's not that kids today are sexually active because they're rebellious or that they've rejected the abstinence message, but what? They never heard it. They're like, what planet are you from? I have had kids act like I just landed on off of a spaceship. Like, what? This is a great idea. Like, you're so smart to come up with this. Have you told others about this? I mean, seriously, it's crazy when you think about it. We are living in a culture in which kids today just don't even have the opportunity to learn this message. It's crazy. All right. So opportunity, I'm pointing out, is the key word here. We want to have... And I guess the reason why I'm saying that is because here's what I hear and I sense so often. You know, kids aren't going to wait. And so what happens then is we water down the message to what we think that is going to be viable for them. Clearly you can't handle the standard of abstinence until marriage. Therefore, I'm going to, you know, water it down and come up with something that I sort of think, forget about it. You've got to hold the standard and teach to the standard. And that's what we're all about. And the standard, I'm arguing today, is marriage. That's the standard. So, what is your program goal? To get kids to hold off on sex, to postpone sexual activity, to delay onset of sexual debut. That's the way the researchers always talk. delay the onset of sexual debut, or save sex for marriage. If you were going to say, that's what I'm going after, which of these would you choose? Which would you say? Saving sex for marriage? Why do I have this slide up here, do you suppose? Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, so there's a lot of a tendency to sort of compromise, to drop this word here and just say, well, we get them to hold off, wait a little longer, delay, something like that. And on the other hand, here's what else I heard. As I travel around the country, I hear good people, abstinence educators, saying to me back things like this. They say, Scott, listen, I say saving sex for marriage. I know they're not going to make it. They're not going to get there. They're not going to do it. But I say it because if I say it, then even though if they don't make it, maybe I'll get this. If I say this, maybe I'll get this. And that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping to just get them to wait a few years. I don't think they're going to wait there, but I'll say that, hoping to move them here, knowing they're not going to get here. What's wrong with that plan? Ding, 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 right? Because listen, this isn't what teaches. This is what teaches. And if you don't believe it, forget about it. Right? Because this doesn't teach. This gets communicated. Look, if I'm saying this, believing this, what am I communicating? This. Even though I said this, I'm communicating this. Because what I believe is what's going to come through. Right? I actually say at my training seminars as I go around the country, look, if you come here today and you hear all of this, at the end of the day, you're not like into it, you don't, please, just don't teach it. Don't teach it. Because it's not going to come across well. In fact, the handful of times, I was just on the phone with yesterday from New Mexico, and I said, look, the only handful of times over the many years we've been doing this that someone has called up and said, this program didn't work. The only handful of time I ask a couple of questions. And sure enough, the last person that called, I don't know, a few months ago, someone called, yeah, we don't like the program. It doesn't work. I said, well, talk to me a little bit, because that's very unusual. She said, well, the teacher just really didn't feel like she needed to be teaching this. Oh. So the teacher didn't want to teach it in the first place, and you told her to teach it, and she did, and it didn't work. Surprise. See, at the end of the day, it's not the program, it's you, right? It's you. It's your heart, it's your passion, it's your love, it's your willingness to faithfully communicate the truth that's going to make the difference, right? So, teach abstinence to teens, yes, so that they won't get pregnant now, but also so that they'll be better prepared to enter into a future, healthy, stable marriage relationship. That's really, really important. It's not just about the now. Abstinence programs need to teach teens to prepare for their future. So where does the marriage message fit in an abstinence program? Where does it fit into your program? Is it fundamental or supplemental? And what I'm arguing is it's not like we're teaching abstinence and, oh, let's remember to say something about marriage now and then. It's not a supplement to what you're teaching. It's fundamental to what you're teaching. It's the core building block. I just said this the other day. It's not part of the message. It's the heart of the message. Do you see that? It's fundamental to what it is that we're teaching. What we're not so much simply trying to avoid teen pregnancies and STDs. We're trying to help young people understand and appreciate and value marriage and to prepare well for it. And so we want to see and understand the big picture. In this article, Marriage is the Missing Message. You don't have to look at it now, but it's in your folder. I said this. While critics attack the until marriage component of the abstinence message, this is necessarily the core of the equation. Indeed, it is precisely because sex education has been taught out of context with no reference to the importance of marriage that so many young adults have failed to appreciate the role of marriage for sexual activity or childbearing. The great tragedy of promoting condoms to school-aged teens isn't that condoms don't always work, but that condoms become a substitute for marriage. Teens aren't encouraged to save sex for marriage, but rather to save sex for condoms, the results of which we now see. Marriage rates have been declining sharply for 5 decades now, And at the current pace, out-of-wedlock births will soon reach 50%. These are related problems, the answer to which is not merely pregnancy prevention programs, but marriage education as well. Now, here's the part that I really want to communicate. Pregnancy is not a problem, and it should not regularly be framed as such. A healthy society needs pregnancies and births and marriages, and it needs to teach its youth that it's best when these occur together. You see? Pregnancy is not a bad thing. And the problem about talking about pregnancy and STDs together is that pregnancy is a beautiful thing. It's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing. And I don't want to communicate in any way that it's bad. I don't want to communicate that sex is bad or that pregnancy is bad. They are good things, wonderful things, beautiful things. We need to teach our teens the proper context. I was on a radio show not too long ago where I had heard earlier in the day on another program than I was on a program, and I had heard on this program they were talking about, this was when maybe a year or so ago when all the videos about Planned Parenthood came out about the selling the baby parts. And someone on a talk show had called in and said, Well, look, 1.2 million babies aborted every year. The problem is they're unwanted. What else are you going to do with them? Lovely. Lovely thought. So then when I was on a program late in the afternoon, I addressed that and I said, first of all, the answer isn't to kill them. Let's start right there. The answer isn't to kill them. So the reason you have 1.2 million unwanted babies is because the cradle of marriage for which the baby should be cared for is broken. The answer isn't to kill the babies, but to rebuild the cradles. So when the babies are born, they have a safe place called marriage. That's what we have to do. We've got to rebuild the cradle of marriage. Look, if we don't rebuild the cradle of marriage, how are we ever going to see abortions come to an end? Marriage is the cradle in which the baby belongs. And the cradle right now is broken. And so that's, I think, what we need to communicate to our young people. It's fundamental to what it is that we're teaching. We're just as much teaching M as we are teaching A. So if marriage is the safest, healthiest context, and we'll break in just a few minutes, if marriage is the safest, healthiest context for sexual activity, shouldn't this be clearly communicated to teens? In other words, how is it possible to teach abstinence without explaining what marriage is and why marriage matters? How do you do it? How do you teach an abstinence education program or counsel clients or speak in any group about abstinence without clearly communicating what marriage is, why marriage matters? How do you do that? I don't think it's possible. You can't do it well. And as I've already said, the problem with CSE programs, comprehensive sex ed programs, isn't just they're giving condoms to kids, is that you won't find anything about marriage in there, not positive anyway. Find me a CSE program, a comprehensive sex ed program, where we'll make any reference to sex within marriage. You won't find it, because what CSE is a codification of the sexual revolution, right? That's what comprehensive sex ed is. It's taking the sexual revolution and mainstreaming it, and they've been highly successful at this. What is in our schools and our universities particularly today is a sexual revolution codified. And so that is what's being taught. And the biggest problem isn't that they're giving out condoms. The biggest problem is that they never reference sex in the context of marriage. And what I'm arguing is if your abstinence education program isn't referencing sex in the context of marriage, you're probably more like a CSE program than you want to be or than you recognize. So this is why the marriage is such a key component. So this was actually we did an annual banquet, and my daughter is a graphic designer, and I asked her a couple years ago, the theme of our banquet was saving marriage. Marriage rates in the United States are now at an all-time recorded low. In fact, we just slipped below 50% last year. For the first time ever, married couples are now a minority in the United States. Never been that way. First time ever. So it's important to understand that marriage is in decline. And if you go back to that graph that we showed a 41% non-marital birth rate, you look at that graph, you look at this graph, Can these trends turn around? Can the non-marital birth rate, now at 41% and climbing, can that be turned around? Can that go back down? And can the marriage rates, which have been falling dramatically, go back up? What is the answer? Really? How's that going to happen? I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. Without a Herculean effort on our part to have a systematic message on the benefits of waiting for marriage throughout the country to a new generation. That's what it's going to take. My quiet time this morning. I left my Bible upstairs. Anybody got a Bible? Somebody, can I borrow a Bible? And with you, I mean, yeah. Thank you. Just in my quiet time this morning, I was reading David in Psalm 144. I want you to see what he said. Thank you. If I got enough light to read this. Okay, let me find some. Okay. I thought this was interesting. As he comes to the end of Psalm 144, I was just in the end of the psalm today, and he says, "Rid me and deliver me from the hand of strangers, children whose mouths speak vanity, and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood." Verse 12, here it is. "That our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, and that their daughters may be as cornerstones polished as the similitude of a palace. That our garners may be full, affording all manner of stone. That our sheep may bring forth thousands and tens of thousands in our streets." That's hard for me to read. I got through most of it. I need glasses. I'm too stubborn to get them. The point is this. David is saying, he's praying for our sons and our daughters, that they would be healthy and strong and that we would live in abundance. And it just struck me that here was David praying not for his own children in particular, exclusively, he's praying for the next generation. And he's praying that the next generation would be healthy and strong, like healthy plants or pillars of a palace. And I thought, that's our prayer. That's our prayer. We want the next generation to be healthy and strong and to succeed. And not that the prosperity of the land would be magical, but that they would be raised in such a way that they are productive members of society. That's what he's praying for. And I just was reading that this morning. I thought, wow, that's really very much what we're about, right? That's what we care about. Thank you. Appreciate that. I use a larger print Bible, so that's why I can bring my own next time. So, we're concerned about this. We're concerned about the next generation. We want kids to understand the value and the benefit of marriage and family. And not only do we need to talk about marriage because it's the core issue, today's youth want to learn about marriage. Look at this data from University of Michigan. They publish this data regularly. This blows me away. Look at this. 9 out of 10 high school seniors surveyed nationally over the last 4 decades say that having a good marriage and family life is very, they want this. They want this. And we're spending all our time talking to them about chlamydia and gonorrhea. Why? They don't care about gonorrhea and chlamydia. They're not going to get it. What they care about in their heart is, am I going to get married someday? Am I going to have a family? Is it going to work for me? Will I grow up to be healthy and strong and productive? That's what's on their heart. This is the data. This is what we ought to be speaking to their heart. They're not thinking about and dreaming about not getting a disease someday. Does that make sense? They're not living their life to not get a disease. They want to get married, most of them, and they want to have a family, and they want it to go well. More to say about that. So we're going to teach them. We have to educate them. Marriage versus cohabitation. Marriage is giving yourself rather than guarding yourself. Cohabitation is guarding yourself rather than... All of this is in the workbooks. I say my goal is not to discourage you from sexual activity, right? What? As much as it is to encourage you towards sexual abstinence and future freedom. I call this a positive approach to abstinence education. I'm not going to spend all my time on the negative, the bad, quit, stop, bad disease. I want to spend my time lifting up. What is the difference between these two words? Discourage and encourage. What's the difference? It's the same root word is what? Courage. I can discourage or I can encourage. What do you want to spend your time doing? Discouraging or encouraging? I want to be an encourager. And what I say, what kids need today is not the whole big bad, stop, don't, disease, pregnant, bad, stop, you're going to turn into a genital wart. That's not what they need. I think what they need is the big lift up. You can do this. You can do this. Come on, you guys. I know you can do it. It's good. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's special. You can do it. You can get there. You can achieve it. Let me paint a picture of what it could be for you. And a positive approach to abstinence education gives them some place to go. It's called marriage. We want to help them see that. We want to help them understand that. So why teach marriage? Marriage has benefits for individuals and society. We have the opportunity and the responsibility to communicate this to teens. It inspires them and increases their desire to choose abstinence. And it's a positive message. It really is. Kids are very much interested in it. So the most beneficial abstinence programs are those which clearly communicate that marriage is the safest, healthiest context for sexual activity. So I say go for it, teach marriage. So that's the foundation then of everything that we're going to do. We'll take a break. One question, then we'll take a break.